Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
A man has been arrested in California for stealing and eating a severed human leg that he found on a train track.
I'm not sure from where, but he came this way. And he walked all through here, and he was waving a person's leg. And he started chewing on it over there. He was biting it, and then he was hitting it against the wall and everything. And
it was a typical Friday for the construction workers laying down concrete outside the Amtrak station in Wasco until they saw a horrifying sight.
He's hitting it. Hey, se la está
comiendo. You are looking at what a witness says is a man eating a detached leg. The detached leg came from a person hit by a train near the Wasco Amtrak station earlier that morning.
Well, on the leg, the skin was hanging. You could see the bone.
Jose Ibarra tells Eyewitness News that when the man walked past him with the leg, he believed him to be homeless. Ibarra is unsure where the man came from. He says Kern County Sheriff's deputies stopped the man after people from the Amtrak station called the police.
Having lived in California for 7 years, I can say that the only thing surprising about this story is that someone called the police, and then that the police showed up, and then that the police actually arrested the indigent cannibal. Presumably, the DA has already let the cannibal out on bond. The story is very, very horrifying, but it is not surprising. California lets addicts and lunatics live on the street, where they do whatever they want, which usually involves extremely disordered acts that harm themselves and others. The scene yesterday was something out of Haiti, ever since that warlord barbecue took over Haiti. It was something out of the third world. But the people who run California, they admire the third world. They tout the advantages, the benefits of the third world. They import the people of the third world. They copy the policies of the third world. And then they're shocked and horrified when our nation starts to look like the third world. But that's what happens. You can't legislate one way and then expect to live in an entirely different way. We can't expect to live differently than our leaders govern. That is a fact of democracy. It's a fact of government. It's a fact of reality. We cannot have our legs and eat them too. I'm Michael Knowles. This is the Michael Knowles Show. They can't get Trump. They can't get him on the civil judgment. They can't get him on the documents. They can't get him on the RICO. They can't get him on this, that, or the other thing. So now they're trying out a new line, which is an old line. AOC is saying that Trump ordered a terror attack on January 6th. So it's just, I guess, the final conclusion of the January 6th narrative. It was a riot. It was criminal. It was an insurrection, nearly a coup d'etat, a terror attack. Okay, we'll get into that in just a second. First, though, folks, Easter is almost upon us, and that means that the Smells and Bells candle is going away. If you want your Smells and Bells candle, go to dailywire.com/shop. This is by far our most popular candle that we've sold like 10 bazillion of these. I know many of you love it. It is our greatest smelling candle yet. So because people want to stock up before they sell out, they are now selling in packs of two and packs of three. If you want to stock up before they are gone, dailywire.com/shop. Speaking of gory things, There is a major case before the Supreme Court on abortion. Now, you know, the court famously a couple of years ago overruled Roe v. Wade, which had been this ridiculous case that pretended there was a right to an abortion in the Constitution. The Dobbs decision says, nope, no more. That's not there. States make their own rules. Since that time, there has been a major shift in the way abortion is performed in the U.S., which is that even 5 years ago, most abortions were surgical. Today, most abortions are the result of a pill. Women take a poison pill, usually mifepristone, and that poisons their child, and then the baby is killed and delivered. Initially, this drug was highly, highly regulated. The FDA has tried to deregulate that drug, and now a group of concerned doctors, the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, the Hippocratic Oath, saying, first, do no harm. Obviously, abortionists first do a lot of harm. This group of pro-life doctors has come and brought a case against the FDA to try to regulate the abortion pill. So the order of what's happened here is that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in August that this abortion poison should not be distributed through the mail or prescribed via telemedicine. They're not even saying that it can't ever be prescribed, but that you can't just like go on Amazon and buy this abortion drug and kill your kid totally unregulated in your home. This drug is now used in, I think it's something like 60% of the abortions. And several studies have shown that this thing is harmful. Yeah, you don't say. A woman takes a very powerful poison designed to kill the child growing inside of her. Yeah, that might have some side effects. There are several studies which show that. But curiously, all of those studies were retracted just a couple of months ago. In February, years after these studies were published, they were all retracted, and that was due to a single review, that was due to a single reader complaint. It was obviously totally politically motivated and a reaction to the Dobbs decision and the way the abortion industry now works. Okay, you are caught up. So the Supreme Court was hearing arguments as to why this drug should or should not be further regulated. Justice Sam Alito, my man, I love a lot of the conservatives. Obviously, you know, I love Clarence Thomas. I like some of the others too. Kavanaugh sometimes, Gorsuch sometimes, Amy Barrett. But Sam Alito is the man. He's probably the justice whose jurisprudence I most align with. Here is him grilling the lawyers.
I gather your injury is that you think you're going to sell more if the restrictions that previously were in place were lifted.
Yes.
So you're going to make more money.
The injury is that we are prevented from selling our product in line with FDA's scientific judgment about the safe and efficacious use of the drug.
And you're going to be harmed because you're going to sell more.
I think that certainly a company's ability to market its product is a part of how it considers the regulatory scheme that governs its conduct.
Do you think the FDA is infallible?
No, Your Honor. We don't think that at all. And we don't think that question is really teed up in any way in this case.
Has the FDA ever approved a drug and then pulled it after experience showed that it had a lot of really serious adverse consequences?
It has certainly done that. There is no drug on the market today under any REMS that requires the kind of reporting that the plaintiffs are saying should be reimposed here.
So why would that be a bad thing? Wouldn't your company, I mean, you don't want to sell a product that causes very serious harm to the people who take your product, relying on your tests and the FDA's tests. Wouldn't you want that data?
Wouldn't you want that? No, we don't, because we want to sell more poison to kill more kids, because that's our business, baby. That's it. Don't forget, this case is not about outlawing the abortion drug. I wish it would be outlawed. That would be great. But that's not what this case is about. It's simply about whether or not this thing can just be, you know, mailed out willy-nilly anywhere in the country, prescribed via telemedicine, you know, some kind of joke consultation. Oh, yeah, you're a woman, you want to kill your kid, all right. Well, Dr. Feelgood, Dr. Doobad. Dr. Doobad over here is going to send you some poison, you can kill your kid. It's about regulating that sort of thing. And so what Alito does here is really lovely in that, one, He points out just how horrific this industry is. He goes, well, the harm you fear by greater regulation is that you're not going to be able to poison as many kids. Because your product, your business, grows if you poison more kids. So what you're saying is this is a great new market opportunity. You're going to be able to poison way more kids if you can prescribe this via telemedicine or send it out in the mail. And so that would be a harm that would be imposed by greater restriction. But you don't want to harm the women here, do you? You don't want to harm your customer. And there are studies which seem to show that this drug does pose serious side effects to the customer. So is that, you're going to rely on this one seemingly kind of out of nowhere FDA ruling? Don't you think you ought to err on the side of caution here? And of course, the lawyer's sticking to her story. She's saying, well, obviously we want to kill all the kids. And the women, they'll be fine. They probably, I'm not too worried. And if like one or two of them die, it's no big deal. We're going to sell more poison. Then I only have the transcript of this. I haven't heard the clip. Justice Alito gets to how they would regulate the abortion pill. He says, shouldn't the FDA have at least considered the application of 18 USC 1461? And he uses that jargon. He uses that numerical title of this section of the US code because he wants to sidestep an issue that the libs are furious about and really do not want the Supreme Court to elevate.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
What the liberals are really worried about in this case and so many other cases that have been cropping up to and including the Dobbs decision that overruled Roe v. Wade, something called the Comstock Laws. So when Alito says, what about this section of the U.S. Code? The lawyer knows exactly what Alito is talking about and says, so I think that the Comstock provisions don't fall within FDA's lane. FDA under FDCA can only maintain restrictions under REMS, blah, 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 legal jargon, blah, blah, blah. We don't need to worry about the Comstock laws. The Comstock provisions are laws that date back now, a century and a half, which regulate things like obscenity, regulate things like mailing out pornography, have regulated things like artificial contraception, have regulated things like abortifacient drugs, drugs that cause babies in the womb to die. And the libs hate this because, and they really took aim at it during the sexual revolution and were able to really weaken the enforcement of the Comstock laws. But they're still on the books. And I think this is what it would really be the mechanism for returning to something like a conservative culture. Obviously, to stop kids from being killed through mail order poison, but also to stop the proliferation of other social ills that conservatives have sometimes pointed out in recent years, notably pornography, the spread of the sexual revolution, and all sorts of vice and degeneracy. It's the Comstock laws. And the libs know this. So they keep trying to bring this up in Supreme Court arguments. And the wiser conservatives, I think, know this. But the kind of squishier, or a little bit more libertarian types, or you do you, man, they don't want to defend those because those seem really old and preachy, they don't want to seem like fuddy-duddies. But this is it. We are either going to, I'm not saying we're going to, impose Sharia law or something here. Okay, it's not going to be the American Taliban. I'm just saying if we enforce the laws that are already on the books, that have been on the books for 150 years, albeit somewhat weakened by liberal court decisions, if we enforce laws to any degree against obscenity, against appeals to the prurient interest, against this sexual revolution and the hookup culture and drugs like this that you can just order on Amazon and then kill your kid, if we just start to enforce those laws a little bit, what we will establish is the fact that we are allowed to have standards. We are allowed to say that this is the kind of society we want to live in, and we don't want it to just be a barbaric society where forget about, a lunatic in California living on the street eating a severed human leg, where people also can't buy a drug in the mail to kill their kids. We look at one of those things and we say, this is so barbaric. This is so gory. What are you talking about? Being able to order a poison drug to kill your kids on Amazon.com is way more barbaric. It's way gorier than the stray homeless man eating a severed leg off an Amtrak. Okay? But we don't want to acknowledge that. We've been told that we can't ever enforce community standards in recent years. Alito's on the right track. Probably, unfortunately, the FDA is going to win here. Court's probably likely to side with them. But I hope at the very least, I hope the pro-life doctors are successful. But even if they're not, I hope that this opens up a little bit more of a conversation to talk about how to avoid becoming a truly barbaric country. Now, meanwhile, speaking of standards and religiously motivated issues, Trump is being attacked, and he's being attacked for selling a Bible.
In the end, we do not answer to bureaucrats in Washington. We answer to God in heaven. Christians are under siege. We must protect content that is pro-God. We love God, and we have to protect anything that is pro-God. We must defend God in the public square and not allow the media or the left-wing groups to silence, censor, or discriminate against us. We have to bring Christianity back into our lives and back into what will be again a great nation. Our founding fathers did a tremendous thing when they built America on Judeo-Christian values. Now that foundation is under attack, perhaps as never before. What can we do? Stand up, speak out, and pray that God will bless America again. I'm proud to endorse and encourage you to get this Bible. We must make America pray again. Pray, get educated, get motivated, and stand with me and the legions of Americans asking God to bless our great nation, to bring our great nation back, and to make America great again.
A lot of conservatives don't like this. I was watching some of the commentary on social media. Trump announced this on Truth Social, which has now made him even more of a billionaire than he already was. That happened yesterday. We mentioned at the end of the show that the stock price was expected to be somewhere around $14 a share, shot up to, I think, $72 a share, settled last night around $65 a share. Anyway, he announces it on social media. I'm looking at some of the commentary, and it's conservatives saying, ugh, this feels icky. I don't like the idea of someone selling a Bible to fund their political campaign. Now, on that point, it appears that that's not what Trump is doing. There's a disclaimer here. Trump has licensed out his name and image, but this is not to fund his campaign. This is not to fund his, sales of the Bible are not going to fund the Trump Organization or any of his businesses. Still, though, some people say, I don't know, it's yucky. I don't want this kind of melding of politics and business and religion. I guess I had the opposite approach. I'm not saying that I'm going to rush out and buy this particular edition of the Bible, but I like that Trump is talking about the Bible. I like that Trump is promoting the Bible. I like that the Bible is getting a greater role in public life. For the past 60 years, the move by our culture has been to remove the Bible from public life, from the classrooms, from government buildings, from public processions. They just want to take it away because the libs are insisting on secularizing and creating a functionally atheist country. And Trump comes out, and Trump speaks sometimes in a clumsy way. I find that charming. He's very blunt. He tells you what he thinks. There's not always a ton of nuance to his rhetoric. That's why it is effective. And so if Trump is going to come out and say, hey, I endorse this Bible, I think that's great. I think it's actually a great thing. Some people might say, well, we shouldn't have to pay for the Bible. You can get the Bible online, for instance. Yeah, you can. Go read the Bible online. That's probably where I read the Bible most. When I'm looking up a verse or a chapter or some other kind of passage, I will look it up online. Or I'll read it in my missal, in my weekly missal when I go to church. Or I don't know, I have any number of Bibles at home that I will open up. But I like the fact that we have a president. And they'll say that Trump, he doesn't go to church that often. He's a lapsed Presbyterian. He's not serious. Yeah, all right. And we're told that our baby-murdering President Joe Biden is a devout Catholic. But he certainly doesn't seem to practice what he supposedly preaches. He certainly doesn't seem to live out his faith in public life. And Donald Trump, whether you want to accuse him of having a sincere, true faith or not, in public, that man holds the Bible. Remember when the libs attacked the church right near the White House, and Trump marches down there and he holds that Bible high? I think that's a good thing. I think it's good to have a greater role for religion, specifically the religion that built our country and civilization, Christianity, in public life. And Trump's the guy to do it. And maybe you'd use a few different words. And maybe, I think in this Bible, it includes the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. I'm not sure that those totally go together. I'd probably just keep it to the Bible itself. But whatever, man. You know, we can all criticize and we can all nitpick here and there. I like, between the two presidential candidates, I'm for the one with the Bible. Okay, the one who holds up the Bible and seems to advance biblical principles and seems to listen to people who are of faith and who want to return to a more traditional society that was animated by Christianity. I'm with that guy. Okay, and if it means that I think actually Lee Greenwood is somehow associated with this Bible, if it means some company that's producing the Bible that isn't even really associated with Trump makes a little money doing it, fine by me. Absolutely fine by me. There's so much more to say. First, though, go to foodforthepoor.org/Knowles. For many people worldwide, the question of where their next meal will come from is a constant pressing concern. Beyond the staggering statistics about food insecurity, there are individual stories like Brandon's. Little Brandon and his family live in a rural city in Guatemala. His mother tries to take care for him and his little brother as best as she can, but it's not enough. Earning a living is hard. Accessing food is even harder. For too many mothers and fathers, there are no safety nets to be found. There is little help from neighbors, social programs, even their own government. When these children get sick from hunger, their bodies become weak. Something as simple as a cold could be devastating. When you donate to Food for the Poor, you're not just giving. You're becoming part of a powerful collective effort. They have an amazing track record with helping people in this kind of dire poverty. And in fact, as far as I can tell, they're one of the only groups that hasn't left Haiti during the recent collapse of that state. They really put their money where their mouth is. You ought to put your money where my mouth is now and donate today by texting Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S, to 51555 or by visiting foodforthepoor.org/Knowles. That is, text Knowles 251555, or go to foodfortheport.org/Knowles. On Friday, I am going to listen to your voice mailbag questions. But many of you write into me in the mailbag just with your typed words, and you say, Michael, I don't know how to submit a voice mailbag question. Here's how you do it. You go to dailywire.com, you log in. Then you go to watch the show pages, you know. Then you go to the Michael Knowles show page. And then you're going to see send a mailbag question. That's going to open up an email. So far, so good. Now, you can record your voice mailbag question anywhere you want. You can record it on your phone. You can record it on your computer. You can record it on an analog audio cassette or on a vinyl record. I don't really care. But what you're going to do is then once you record it, you get that file. Keep it to a minute, please, so that I can put it on the air. Then you just attach it to the email. You click send. Boom. Done. And then I get to talk to you on Friday. Speaking of Trump's Republican Party, hate to say I told you so. It wasn't my most ambitious Nostradamus prediction, but Ronna McDaniel, who had been hired after leaving the Republican National Committee, hired by NBC as a political commentator, she has been fired after 2 days. According to NBC Universal News Group Chairman Cesar Conde, quote, no organization, particularly a newsroom, can succeed unless it is cohesive and aligned. Over the last few days, it has become clear that this appointment undermines that goal. I want to personally apologize to our team members who felt we let them down. While this was a collective recommendation by some members of our leadership team, I approved it. I take full responsibility for it. What is he referring to here? We played one little clip from Meet the Press and Chuck Todd yesterday, but it was basically all the hosts on MSNBC and NBC coming out on Ronna McDaniel's first day on the job to say that the former head of the RNC is not welcome at NBC News.
The fact that Ms. McDaniel is on the payroll at NBC News To me, that is inexplicable.
I have some thoughts about Ronna McDaniel and the normalization of the dangerous damned lies from the Republican Party.
She is a co-conspirator and an enabler.
An anti-democracy election denier.
She lied to the American people to further the autocratic movement that is Trumpism.
She dropped the Romney from her name, apparently, because Donald Trump hates Mitt Romney.
How does that feel? To change your name to curry favor with a madman.
We weren't asked our opinion of the hiring, but if we were, we would have strongly objected to it.
And I hope they will reverse their decision.
We hope NBC will reconsider its decision.
And they did, because all the hosts said we can't have the head of the RNC, the former head of the RNC, come onto our network. A reminder of something that I may have observed for about 8 years now. The libs say that this is not about Republicans. This is not about conservatives. It's just Trump in particular who is evil. They want open debate. They want a strong Republican Party. We need that in a democracy. But it's just this Trump. He's the evil one. He must be expelled from politics. But it's not about the Republican voters. It's not about the other Republican elected officials or the party. Except it is. It's not just that they think Trump is illegitimate and the rest of us are fine. They think every Republican who in any way advances the platform of the Republican Party is illegitimate, not a desirable participant in our sacred democracy. For the libs, the way to preserve our sacred democracy is to disenfranchise half the people. and only allow them to have a say in how the government works. That way, we will have a flourishing democracy. And I remember back in the early days of Trump, there were the squishes. The squishes, the never-Trumpers, I understood to some degree why people were so offended by Trump. He changed Republican positions. He actually reverted a lot of Republican policy positions back to the more traditional view on things like tariffs, on things like immigration, and on things like foreign war, and so on. But I understand it upended decades of Republican Party orthodoxy, and people said, oh, this man's different. They're going after Trump because this man is different. They won't come after us. They don't think we're illegitimate. No, they do. It was the meme that Trump tweeted out in 2020 where he said, they're not trying to get me, they're trying to get you, and I just happen to be in the way. And it was a very effective meme. It was a very effective campaign line. And NBC News is proving it truer and truer every day. Ronna McDaniel, who I like well enough, she seems perfectly nice. She ran the RNC. This is a Beltway establishment GOP institution. And even she is too right-wing because she supported the Republican president who won on at least one occasion. Can't have that. That's what this is all about. You are not legitimate. You can't participate. If you try to participate in our democracy, you're undermining the democracy by your very presence. Now, speaking of how Republican politics undermines our democracy, AOC.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Is now ratcheting up the rhetoric to say that Republicans doing politics is tantamount to terrorism.
Has there ever been a president, Republican or Democrat, that has been subject to this level of criminal charges, indictments, and investigations? This is not about party. This is not about politics. This is about corruption and criminality. We're talking about an individual who ordered essentially a terrorist attack on the Capitol of the United States in order to retain power. That is not about being a Republican. It is not about being a Democrat. It's about being an unethical and individual who is subject and prone to criminality. And unfortunately, This is the state that we're in. And I actually think that the fact that it's happening in so many places and so many jurisdictions cuts in the face of that. This is not just New York. This is Georgia. This is federal courts as well.
So if AOC is going to accuse Trump of ordering a terror attack, you would think, I mean, that's a pretty significant charge. You would think that she would provide any evidence for that. She might quote him. She might cite a date or an action, but she, of course, does not do that. She says it all surrounds January 6th. But she can't quite tell you when exactly Trump ordered the terror attack because, of course, he did not. He said many times, be peaceful. If you demonstrate, make sure that you're very peaceful. Then when things started to get a little rowdy, he said, go home, don't do this. But in the left's mind, none of that matters. It was a terror attack that threatens our democracy. It's an existential threat. Our whole country might die. Do you remember net neutrality? Do you remember the repeal? I forget. It was 2017. There was this provision of federal communications law that was slightly changed under the Trump administration, and they called it the repeal of net neutrality, which just changed the way that internet service providers were regulated to some degree. And we were told at that time that that would destroy the internet. We were told that you would now have to pay for every tweet that you posted. We were told that people would die by prominent left-wing public figures. We were told people would die because of net neutrality repeal. And you all survived. I'm happy to say that I survived. It's very difficult for the left to maintain this degree of histrionics. Very, very difficult, especially for 8 years now or something like that. So when AOC comes out and says he ordered a terror attack, nobody believes it. The host of the liberal program doesn't believe it. Nobody seriously thinks of it as a terror attack. Fewer people even think of January 6th as an insurrection or a riot. And this is not just my own gut feeling here. This is borne out in surveys on the matter. When you surveyed people in 2021, was January 6th terrible, awful, deadly, a terror attack, a coup d'etat, an insurrection? A significant portion, especially of Democrats, said yes. That same survey last year, so 2 years afterward, every group, including the Democrats, fewer people were likely to believe the January 6th narrative. People buy it less and less. When AOC says, can you think of a president who's been charged with so many crimes? No, but that's also undercutting her argument. Again, not just my gut feeling. This is virtually every survey on the subject. Most people think, and think correctly, that the prosecutions of Trump are just politically motivated. The fact that he's being threatened with 700 years in prison, the Democrats think that's going to convince the American people that this guy's really bad. If it were just 600 years in prison, we might say 50-50 that he's guilty. But 700 years, oh, he must be guilty. No, it's the opposite. The fact that he's being prosecuted in four different places for totally unrelated quote-unquote crimes and having a civil judgment levied against him and now being accused of a terror attack, and every day they insinuate that he's super-duper mega Hitler 3.0, it has the effect of undermining their argument, especially when they come out and they say, yeah, also, the other Republicans can't come on our TV networks too. Also, Ronna McDaniel, a perfectly amiable, relatively establishment Republican figure, she can't speak on these matters either. Oh, so your problem is just that sometimes the Republicans have won. That's Trump is being prosecuted for winning in 2016, and other conservatives around the country are being investigated and in some cases prosecuted for ever succeeding at anything in public life. Okay. Who's the terrorist here? Who are the real terrorists? Now, AOC, I think it's fair to say, suffers from something of at least an educational deficit, if not an intellectual, at least an educational deficit. And speaking of educational deficits, there is a big story going viral from Barry Weiss's outlet. It's called the Free Press, I think. And the headline is, Inside the New Wave of Old School Education. Amid growing claims that schools indoctrinate students, classical education which teaches kids to think critically and master old books, is making a comeback. And this article was going everywhere yesterday. I saw it linked on Drudge. It's going all around social media. I'm just going to read a very little bit of it because I really want to love this article, and I'm generally happy about the phenomenon that it's describing, but ironically, an article talking about the rise of classical education is actually showing us just how difficult it will be to reform education. Opens up, Menlo Park, California. On a rainy evening last January, a group of girls in long pleated skirts and boys in jackets and ties were sitting around a mahogany table in an old house discussing Homer's Iliad. It was parents' night at Chesterton Academy of St. James, a private school in Silicon Valley, a fertile crescent of innovation. Students were free to argue anything, about the text at least, as long as it was well-reasoned. And as a 21-year-old, now the writer's talking about herself, as a 21-year-old who was taught what to think, not how to think, at my supposedly top-tier private school in Los Angeles, it felt liberating. Lily was being trained in what parents and educators across the country are calling classical education, teaching kids to think critically and master old books, which are often written by dead white males. In the past, this used to just be called education. Okay, it goes on for a long time, but this is the point that's unfortunate. She says, well, I love this classical education because it doesn't teach students what to think. It teaches them how to think. No, it doesn't. Classical education is great. It's a good thing that it's being revived, where it's being revived, but classical education very much teaches students what to think. In fact, all education necessarily teaches students what to think. Some education just lies about it. So ironically, it's modern liberal education, which purports not to teach students what to think, only how to think. But that's not possible because you can't know how to think about mathematics without knowing that 2 + 2 = 4. You can't know how to think about the development of nation states without learning that the Treaty of Augsburg was signed and then the Peace of Westphalia was signed. You have to learn stuff with dates and facts that you can get wrong, where it's not just all open to interpretation and opinion. So the nice thing here is that people are yearning for a classical education. They realize that modern education, I mean, this dumb phrase, we got to teach students how to think, not what to think. That is a line from the cultural anthropologist Margaret Mead in the 20th century. Margaret Mead was a huge lib, okay? And yet now it's the conservatives who are pretending that that's some kind of conservative principle. It's certainly not. But while we love this longing for the classical education, people realize something's going wrong. What's so distressing here is even the proponents of classical education don't know what it is. And that is because when a thing goes extinct, it is very, very difficult to revive that thing. And we ought to be a lot more careful about preserving things from extinction because we think, oh, well, we'll reanimate it years in the future. Oh, yeah, the woolly mammoth went extinct. Well, we're going to reanimate it now all these many years on. Well, there's a problem with that because even if you did create a woolly mammoth in a laboratory, you wouldn't know how to teach it to be a woolly mammoth. It's not just about the DNA. It's not just about the material stuff. It's about the culture. How does you learn how to be the thing that you are from your parents, from your community, from your culture? That's true of animals, to some animals at least too, as it is true of human beings. How do we learn what a classical education is? Education is relational. It's about leading people. Like duk, you know, is the root there. It's about leading people out of ignorance. It's a relationship that's really a relationship of love between a teacher and a student to cultivate desires, to learn, to immerse oneself in the greatest that one's culture has to offer. And the libs have largely succeeded at killing that. I'm not saying it's a totally impossible effort to revive that, but it's going to be a huge uphill battle. It's going to be such an uphill battle that even the greatest defenders of classical education around today are still operating from within the context of a liberal pedagogy. Now, Russia has been making the headlines in recent weeks due to the actions of Vladimir Putin.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
To comprehend Putin's motivations, we must examine the historical context that shaped his behaviors. In the new season of What We Saw, An Empire of Terror, host Bill Whittle unmasks communism by taking a closer look at the history of the Soviet Union. This tale of terror offers a compelling presentation of the horrors that plagued the Soviet Union and the viciousness of its leaders. The reality is modern-day Russia has been centuries in the making. This series will give you a better understanding of its history as well as the communism that threatens our own homeland. Inside Episode 4, streaming now on Daily Wire Plus, Bill Whittle uncovers the horrors committed by Lenin and his Bolsheviks immediately after the successful revolution. Go to dailywire.com/subscribe to become a member today. My favorite comment yesterday is from Rockman7503, who says, yes, Dr. King's most famous inspirational quote, "We are coming to get our check." That's true. That kind of raised an eyebrow yesterday when the race hustlers said, "We want $15 billion from the white churches in the city." To quote the great Dr. Martin Luther King, "We're coming to get our check." And I don't, maybe he said that. I don't know. Different people wrote different speeches of Martin Luther King. And sometimes he was a little bit more commie and demanding than at other times he sounded more Christian and, spiritual than purely material. But I don't remember the line, "We're coming to get our check." If so, man, the libs have really gone far afield there. Forget about "I have a dream" and whatever. That's done. That's totally done. Give me my money. At least it's more direct. At least I guess it's more honest. Now, speaking of not understanding things, former Senator Claire McCaskill has gone on MSNBC, which has now banished the Republicans, and she has gone on to admit something that should be embarrassing and humiliating for her, but it's not, because it's an opinion shared by everyone at MSNBC. She can't understand. She still, 8 years on, can't understand how Trump got elected.
You know, it is hard. I struggle with grasping the reality that our country elected this man in the first place. Then J6 happened and everything that went along with that. And then he's indicted repeatedly and investigated and indicted again repeatedly. Then he does this, which is so despicable and such a spit in the face of anyone who loves our Constitution and the rule of law. And I think the people that I served with, the Republicans, are taking a grave risk.
Yes, they're taking a grave, grave risk here after J6 and the terror attack. And yeah, whatever, blah, blah, blah. We've heard that before. The first part is what interests me. I still can't understand how Americans elected Donald Trump. I know you can't. I know you can't. You don't understand a lot of things, Claire McCaskill and MSNBC and liberals broadly. You don't get it. And that's unfortunate for you. And that's probably, if there is a grave risk to democracy, that's probably the gravest one. The fact that you don't understand the most basic aspects of the political vision of half the country. Yeah, that's a grave threat to democracy. I understand how people voted for Obama. I didn't like Obama. Still don't really like Obama. He's a terrible president. But I get why they voted for him. They voted for him because he was the first black president. That's the main reason that people voted for him. They voted for him in 2008 to prove that America's not racist. And they reelected him in 2012 for much the same reason, because had they rejected the first black president, that would make America even more racist than we were perhaps before we elected him in the first place. That's the main reason Obama got elected. Again, I think that's a dumb reason to vote for someone, but it does motivate liberals. And they elected him because he was quite progressive. They elected him because he opposed the Iraq War when his opponent in the Democrat primary, Hillary Clinton, supported the Iraq War. That was one differentiating factor. Hillary had what was once considered an advantage and then became some baggage, which is that Bill Clinton was a moderate. You know, "I'm a new Democrat. I understand all everybody. I feel everybody's pain. Everybody loves Bill. Bill loves everybody too." So that's why they were the moderate Democrats. And By 2008, people didn't want moderation on the progressive side. They wanted a more full-throated progressivism. And that's why Howard Dean became the head of the Democratic National Committee. And until he started screeching on the campaign trail, he actually was doing a decent job of winning a nomination himself as a Democrat for president. So Obama was more progressive. Anyway, I totally get that. All terrible reasons, and the libs are wrong about it, but I get it. The libs don't understand why Donald Trump was elected because they don't understand what really motivates.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
It's conservatives. They've just been told their whole lives that conservatives are motivated by hatred for other races and hatred of women and hatred of this and that and hatred, just hatred, I guess. And that, I guess that's an okay campaign line. And if the liberals dominate the entire culture and you're a liberal voter, then you never really have to confront any alternative to that. But if you're a conservative, you do, because you don't control any of the institutions. So you have to know what the liberals think because they tell you 24 hours a day and your view is not. So ironically here, it is the liberal hegemony, the liberal political hegemony in virtually every institution in America that is threatening democracy. It's Claire McCaskill, far more than Donald Trump or Ronna McDaniel. It's Claire McCaskill and AOC who are threatening our supposedly sacred democracy. Now, speaking of candidates in our sacred democracy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is running as a third-party candidate, he has just picked his vice president. And I'm not going to say I told you so. I am going to say I told you so, because I did. A lot of conservatives were very afraid when Bobby Kennedy came out and said he was running for president. They said, oh, actually, he might pull more votes from Trump than from Biden. The Democrats are all unified, but the Republican Party is divided up because there's this nasty primary here. And Bobby Kennedy was right on COVID and vaccines, and Trump actually promoted the vaccines, and he defended Dr. Fauci and blah, 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 whatever. He said, first of all, people's memories are very, very short. If COVID were the big issue in 2024, Ron DeSantis probably would be the nominee, but it's not, and he ain't. Second of all, RFK hates vaccines, so he agrees with a lot of conservatives on that front, but he's a huge lib on every other issue. So he's going to pull from Biden much more than from Trump. People said I was crazy. Well, he's just picked his vice presidential running mate, and he has picked a woman, according to the New York Times. I don't think it's official yet, but it's being reported everywhere. The woman who is leading the pack is Nicole Shanahan. She is the ex-wife of Google's co-founder, Sergey Brin. Okay, so already, well, he's picking a Google, someone very intimately involved in Google, okay? Nicole Shanahan has a history of donating to the Democratic Party. She isn't even a long time ago former Democrat who had an awakening. She donated to Biden in 2020. Then this year, she's given to RFK's campaign. But she donated to Bobby Kennedy when he was running as a Democrat. She's a major criminal justice reform advocate. So, you know, more lunatics eating severed legs on the streets. You know, that's pretty much what criminal justice reform is. I don't mean any of this to knock his potential VP candidate or to knock Bobby Kennedy. I'm actually thrilled by all of this. I'm thrilled that RFK Jr. is in the race. I am thrilled that he's picking this woman to be his VP, a solid liberal Democrat. RFK, he's a liberal Dem. I like him, actually, in that he's a basically honest and somewhat more reasonable liberal Democrat, but he's a big liberal Dem, okay? And the Kennedy ticket, the Kennedy name being royalty in the Democratic Party, and the Kennedy ticket, especially with this woman, that's pulling votes from Biden. That's not pulling votes from Trump. And it could even potentially be decisive in 2024. We got some polls on that, but we are out of time. And today is Woke Wednesday, so we're getting to the Membroom segmentum. You do not want to miss it. Become a member at dailywire.com. Use code Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S, at checkout for 2 months free on all annual plans.
time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.